The Compliance Perspectives podcast is sponsored by Onspring, a no-code GRC software for compliance pros like you. Visit onspring.com to learn more. Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Essen, Germany is Jan Sprafke. Jan is Chief Compliance Officer from Ericsson. And in many ways, we're going to be continuing a conversation we had and some talks he gave back in Atlanta in 2023 at a UN conference. Jan, thanks for joining us. I think it'd be good if we started by you giving an overview of Ericsson. I think we've all heard the name, but may not be as familiar as we might think with a company, its size, complexity, and the size of its supply chain.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Always a pleasure, and thanks for having me. And yeah, so I think many people know Ericsson from the past, you know, when we manufactured basically mobile phones like Sony Ericsson, you may recall, but we have quit this B2C business around 2011, so 12, 15 years ago. However, for more than 140 years, Ericsson is active in the telecommunications sector, providing the infrastructure for fixed wireless telephone or mobile networks. And we are the ones who own basically the patents on many critical IPs that allows us to talk and communicate. So for instance, we invented Bluetooth. We have a very good income from our IP royalties, as every mobile phone manufacturer like Apple or Samsung, you know, they need to pay us a couple of dollars of royalty for each phone they sell. But nowadays we have shifted our business, and I think we can say 50% of our business is selling hardware, the network infrastructure, like the radios on towers you see to get connectivity, while the other 50%, you know, we are a software company in cloud computing and helping to ensure connectivity globally. And from a USP, so to say, our USP is we are just one out of a very few competitors who can offer this technology globally. And I mean, our products are highly demanded as our current society and our economy is dependent on proper and fast communication technology, for instance, for the Internet of Things. So that's why we have a prospering business model here.
You know, as you're describing the technology, it certainly defines ubiquitous. I don't think any of us can function without Bluetooth, for example, anymore. Now, when we were together at the UN Anti-Corruption Conference in Atlanta, you spoke about your supply chain and the supplier meetings that you have. First, with so many suppliers, I can't imagine compliance meets with all of them. How do you prioritize who you talk to, how you spend your time, and so forth?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And as we are a very global company, as connectivity and access to information is a basic human need, we are active in more than 180 countries. And of course, as always in the compliance space and risk space, you know, we need to be mindful to allocate our resources to risk where risk occur and exposure. So in other words, we need to follow a risk-based approach. That starts usually for compliance professionals with taking a look at the country risk and our go-to-market models. So for instance, do we do in-country sales? Do we have physical presence in a country? Do we do indirect business sales, you know, let's say from Sweden, from the US, and do some shipments to some countries? So that tells us a lot already about our exposure, our risk exposure. And then we are heavily dependent on external suppliers because, you know, our business is a cycling business. You may remember 4G, you know, on your mobile phone is 4G standards. And nowadays we talk about 5G, but it always takes 5 years to 10 years in cycles, you know, that we deploy this new technology. So we have not insourced a lot of these resources who can actually build towers and radios to ensure this 5G connectivity. Instead, we are relying on qualified suppliers, and we usually make use of long term. So and that's why we always need to ask where we are active. Out of 180 countries, for sure there are probably 100 countries a compliance professional would say these are high risk markets we're active in, and that's why we need to come closely with all the assurance functions together with the sourcing function to decide on, you know, who can train our suppliers and make them aware of our expectations we lay down usually, of course, in our code of conduct or supplier code of conduct. And then we call, for instance, for supplier days, either in-person physical meetings where we invite them over to come to our premises where we really run workshops with them, or we do it remotely, of course, in particular in pandemic times. That has been also a good opportunity and a good way to interact with our suppliers.
So what's typically covered in the meetings that you have with them?
Yeah, I think there are a bunch of topics usually from a company perspective you have when it comes to suppliers. It's not limited to FCPA requirements, ABC, AML compliance, but it starts oftentimes with health and safety. Of course, we as Ericsson, we as a company, we also want to ensure that the external workforce working on us ensure that their employees, will abide to health and safety standards, that are provided tools for that to cater for it. So there's a variety of topics usually, we are not only compliance professionals, but people from sourcing, from responsible business, will do some trainings basically to explain what are our expectations in detail. What does it mean in practice in the field? You can describe a lot and codify in your code of conduct, but what does it really mean in practice? And does really Ericsson expect that you cater for it and that you meet these requirements? Oftentimes these questions come back and they want a sound discussion on that, what it really means in practice first.
Now, as I recall, you also work with suppliers to help them train their suppliers. How does that work?
So I think you as a company, particularly if you operate in high-risk markets, you need to decide. You have a third party, a robust and very sound third party management process for the vetting of suppliers in high-risk markets. Then you hopefully have a end-to-end sourcing process. So from onboarding of a supplier, then the third party vetting is just one piece, so to say, of that vetting process. And then you have, of course, the life cycle management of suppliers that are more, even more important. To pay attention to the life cycle of a supplier. And then I think it's really important, as in a second step, that you decide as a company, do you only work with suppliers that you have vetted yourself according to your standards, or do you allow that your supplier is subcontracting to a sub-sub supplier that you have not vetted according to your systems? Yeah, I think that is a very, very a crucial decision you need to take in high-risk markets as a company. So oftentimes we decide against that. And if we say you are allowed to engage subcontractors, then we want to vet them ourselves according to our standards. Yeah, so that's, I think, the first point I would like to highlight here, that this is really, really important. If they use subcontractors that are more of low risk nature of the services they provide, and we don't want to make use of our systems to do the vetting, but leave it up to our larger suppliers that also maintain a compliance program and a third-party vetting process, then sometimes we just help them, we sit with them, and to go through their compliance program, they explain to us how they do it and provide some comfort to Ericsson that they meet basically our standards we have set in the code of conduct, our expectations that every supplier needs to do and ensure proper onboarding and compliance vetting of their subcontractors. Oftentimes, we need to help them, I need to admit, because we are a very large organization. Ericsson has 105,000 employees, so we have lots of resources and, of course, more financials than a small or medium enterprises that are usually our suppliers. So that's why in a very smart way would be, to open up our e-learnings we have designed for our third parties that need to take part mandatorily, that we also open up for their subcontractors. Yeah, in particular in high-risk markets, that really makes sense so that we also take on the trainings of their subcontractors, for instance.
Fascinating, quite the effort. Now, how is all this work with your third parties handled in terms of what compliance handles and what operations and others would do?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And that goes back a bit to the accountability, right? I mean, it's clear that compliance office, the unit, is not the ones who would like to engage or onboard a supplier. And it's not sourcing. Sourcing is a second line of defense who is not challenging only commercials, but also business rationale and caters for some compliance aspects, in particular in Ericsson. We are really happy to have a strong sourcing organization, but the responsibility and accountability stays with operations. There must be somebody who wants to engage a third party, a supplier, for instance, because we want to roll out a network project, a customer project in a certain country. And this person we really made responsible and accountable in the end-to-end sourcing process, not only in the vetting process, to be on top of everything that happens with this supplier, to be able to know to whom to turn at the supplier side, to whom to speak, and if there are any changes on at supplier side, to inform sourcing and compliance to take care of it. For instance, if there would be an adverse media hit, we will not get through our database checks and monitoring. The persons on the ground in the field oftentimes know much better, have better intelligence available than the global compliance framework and databases. So here, operations is key to take accountability and sourcing as a second line of defense, also to play the role of assurance functions and not leave it up only to a compliance function to do proper oversight of third parties.
Well, with all those third parties, with all that range, it's obvious that you couldn't do it all out of one office, that you really do need that local ownership and people involved at all levels of the organization. Well, Jan, thank you so much for sharing these insights with us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.